hotel from a friend of mine. And my friend said, hey, you need to check out this interesting report because my daughter, who goes to Stanford, has this as required reading in her anthropology class. I don't know if she's in her first or second year at Stanford. So he beams it to me, and it has the title, 15 Answers to Creationist Nonsense. Now, I get this last night, and I'm all prepared to do something else this morning, but when I looked at this, and it was really late, and I was really tired, and I was really irritated when I got done reading it, I decided, well, maybe I could spend a little bit of time on this before we get into the video, because what I had intended to do this morning was to let us watch the part of the debate in which Hugh Ross answers one of the other scientists who is saying that evolution is a superior argument to creationism. So we may still get to that. But I would like to go through some of the interesting arguments that this article talked about. And the reason is that even though this is old, this is the Scientific American, July 2002, so it's 8 years old. But this is Scientific American. This isn't just some ragtag magazine that you find, you know, in the little things that you put 25 cents in. Or do they still cost 25 cents, newspapers and stuff? How much are they now? 50 cents?
At
least. Well, I don't read them, so I don't care. Anyway, it's a very high-level, prestigious magazine, and it's interesting for us as Christians to know what it is that the rest of the world, particularly the scientific establishment, thinks about us and about our arguments, because they have some very strong opinions, and the opinions aren't always favorable to us. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through a couple of these. I'm going to read what they say, because what they say is so much more interesting than if I were to just paraphrase it. And I want you to listen to it, and then we're going to go through a couple of the arguments. And what I will do is I'll put their answer to our creationist nonsense up there, and then underneath it, try to spec out the details, gross details of their argument. So here's the first one. Evolution is only a theory. This is number one. This is what they say, Scientific American says, that we claim as an argument against evolution, and that it is nonsense. Evolution is only a theory. It is not a fact or a scientific law. Many people learned in elementary school that a theory falls in the middle of a hierarchy of certainty, above a mere hypothesis but below a law. Scientists do not use terms that way, however. According to the National Academy of Sciences, a scientific theory is a, quote, well-substantiated explanation of some aspect of the natural world that can incorporate facts, laws, inferences, and tested hypotheses. And I end the quote. No amount of validation changes a theory into a law, which is a descriptive generalization about nature. So when scientists talk about the theory of evolution, or the atomic theory, or the theory of relativity for that matter, they're not expressing reservations about its truth. In addition to the theory of evolution, meaning the idea of descent with modification, one may also speak of the fact of evolution. The NAS defines a fact as an observation that has been repeatedly confirmed and for all practical purposes is accepted as true. And there are quotes around the word true, because as a good scientist, you don't want to say anything is true, do you? The fossil record and abundant other evidence testify that organisms have evolved through time. Although no one observed those transformations, the indirect evidence is clear, unambiguous, and compelling. All sciences frequently rely on indirect evidence. Physicists cannot see subatomic particles directly, for instance, so they verify their existence by watching for telltale tracks that the particles leave in a cloud chamber. Absence of direct observations does not make physicists' conclusions less certain. Okay. So let's take a peek at this for a second. The argument is that we say evolution is only a theory, it is not a fact or a scientific law. That, to them, is preposterous. For them being the author of the Scientific American article, A theory is a well-substantiated explanation of some aspect of the natural world that incorporates facts, laws, inferences, and tested hypotheses. Now, I'm not quite sure what the difference between this and the next one, that a law is a descriptive generalization about nature. The article seems to imply that evolution is both a theory and a law, because it's a descriptive generalization about nature, and that it's also a fact. That is, theory of evolution, the law of evolution, is also a fact. That it's an observation repeatedly confirmed and is accepted as true. What I'm interested to find out is, are they right? Are they right? What do you think?
Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, what's a theory, you know? Because, well, we don't mean that by a theory. And he went on to this whole thing. So they're not saying, they're not even going by facts, really. I mean, they're just going on whatever they want to make it.
Okay, so do we think evolution is only a theory? It's not a fact or a scientific law?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Mark, I think first thing that comes to my mind is, we in this class need to keep in mind that when scientists talk about creationists, what they have in their mind often is young earth creationists.
That's really true. Yep.
And we are not young earth creationists.
Right.
And so there's actually a lot of this that we can agree with. Unlike young earth creationists and like the scientific community, we believe that life started simple and got more complex over billions of years. And if that's what they mean by evolution, that simply, you know, there's things later that were more complex than things earlier, we can agree with them. We can say, yes. So first I would say, what is your definition of evolution? Can it include creationism? Because all we're talking about when we say evolution is that stuff got more complicated as time went on.
Excellent point. So let me give you their definition. And the reason I know their definition is as I went through the article, they defined it. And their definition is descent with modification. In other words, there was one singular point at which there was only one form of life. And from that one form of life, some kind of amoeba or some kind of blue-green algae or something like that, flowed all of the life afterwards. That is their definition. And in fact, it appears as though this particular author restricts evolution merely to already existing life. And we'll get into the other one of the questions, because they will get into asking the question, why is it that you can't prove that life started automatically? But that's a different question. So, getting back to this. Evolution, whether you look at it from the perspective of starting with a last universal common ancestor and then branching out into all the variety of life that we have now, if we accept that as evolution, and nobody's going to dispute that.
Well, there's one caveat even to that.
Okay. What is it?
Micro versus macro.
All right. But let's say that contains both. It contains both micro and macro evolution. Because you have to have macro evolution in order to go from blue-green algae to all of the phyla that exist today.
Right.
Right. Okay. So, is that a theory? Well, at least it's a theory. At least it's a theory. Okay, so we're not going to argue that it's a theory or that it isn't a theory, because it is a theory.
Well, I don't know. Are we not? That's kind of one of the issues I take with this.
Okay.
First of all, they're saying that we say that evolution is only a theory, where a theory is supposed to be a very solid thing that we can hang our hats on pretty well, this well-substantiated explanation. First of all, we don't say it's only a theory, because that denigrates the word theory. And secondly, we are saying that it is not a theory because it has not been well substantiated in our view.
Excellent. This is interesting here, because they're alleging that we're saying evolution is only a theory. All right. I'm not so sure we are.
I heard a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it may be some of the young earth creationists, maybe others too. But they'll say it's only a theory. Well, let's ask the question, first of all, is it at least a theory? Well, yeah, it is at least a theory. Because if we use their definition, their National Academy of the Sciences definition, that it's a well-substantiated explanation, well-substantiated, I guess, is a question at issue, of some aspect of the natural world that incorporates facts, laws, inferences, etc., and tested hypotheses, then it does fit that. Now, there are different meanings of theory, but that's what they're saying is a theory, and if we grant that to them, then we can say it's at least a theory. Go ahead.
You know, what's always been a problem for me in this is that it's not, it's an ongoing process. I mean, we're not finished. We are still discovering stuff. We as creationists, I mean, like you said, every week they find some discovery that points towards God creating us. And also evolution, they're still digging stuff up and developing more techniques to find out. So it seems to me the way these should be addressed is, and 2010, evolution is still a theory. Creationism is a theory, and we are working towards
the truth.
Yeah. Oh, more and more understanding. Because go ahead.
A lot of Christians argue that that animals, many orders of animals, were created at the same time, including humans and dinosaurs. And they still believe, some people do believe that humans walked the earth at the same time that dinosaurs did, which, you know, is completely. The thing is that.
Well, for the record, we do not, in this class, and RTB does not hold that the dinosaurs and the humans were cruising around at the same time doing the Flintstones routine.
But still, yeah. The strata and the fossil records has a falsification opportunity in there for
yes.
People that don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And
it does.
If they were to find, like, say, a rabbit in the Precambrian or a horse in this Silurian, that would completely wash away that whole theory. But in 150 years, 160 years, it hasn't. So it's falsifiable, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I'm not arguing with that. I don't think anybody else is either. Over here, and then I'll take back there. Go ahead, sir.
If their assumption is that the evolution started from a single source of life.
Right, from some last universal common ancestor.
That itself is a great assumption, and which is not provable. And therefore, I mean, even if they could show that life did evolve, the fact that they say it comes from one particular source, okay, that can't be provable. So I think that reduces the theory even to a hypothesis.
It might. Now, remember what he's arguing here, and you're right. But if you're arguing the way they're looking at us, they're going to say, well, there isn't really this hierarchy of hypothesis, theory, and law. That they're arguing against that. So I see the form that you're taking, the form of your argument is that there is a hypothesis, theory, and law. But if we look at their definition, are we going to adopt the fact that it is a fact or a scientific law? That's where I'm headed. So I'm going to shepherd you over this way for just a second. Hold on the questions. If a law is a descriptive generalization about nature, what's the difference between that and a theory?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know either. The author of this article didn't do a really good job spelling that out. But this is verbatim extracted from the article that I just read to you. Ross, go ahead.
Yeah, just about those two things. Given those descriptions, a law is actually more weakly supported than a theory. Because it says a law mm-hmm. is a descriptive generalization about nature. Well, I could say that, you know, Bozo the Clown is responsible right. for all creation. That's a descriptive generalization about nature. But that definition doesn't say anything about whether it's substantiated or true.
Right.
Either one is man-made.
Okay, they're all. Everything we're talking about is man-made, Al. We haven't got into God doing it yet. So all of these propositional arguments are definitely going to be man-made. We haven't gotten into Bible stuff yet. But stay tuned, okay? All right, go ahead.
I'd have to read that in context, because I don't know if they were intending to define law there, because their audience is scientists.
Yes, which is why this was so insanely appalling when I read it. You would. But remember...
But I don't know what in context they might be saying. A law, a
Now he says, here's it right out of the text here. According to the National Academy of Sciences, this starts a sentence. A scientific theory is a, quote, well-substantiated explanation of some aspect of the natural world that can incorporate facts, laws, inferences, and tested hypotheses, quote. No amount of validation changes a theory into a law, which disputes what was said earlier here. No amount of validation changes a theory into a law, which is a descriptive generalization about nature. That is the definition, without extracting it.
Incorporates facts also.
Well, yeah. I mean, a theory is some proposition that makes a claim that can be tested. All right, that's a most generalized statement about a theory. But it's also proposing that it could be falsified. A law can also be falsified, too. I mean, there would be some situation where it could be falsified in principle. But the difference between a theory and a law is what? Does anybody want to take a shot at that?
Theory is much more encompassing, bigger umbrella, shall we say.
Well, what's the law of gravity? Is the law of gravity a theory? Yeah, it's a theory. There's a theory of gravity, the theory of gravitation. The law of gravity is just very well articulated and very well specified.
It's something that cannot be overturned, say, easily by anything else. And that's, I think it's...
Well, I would argue, and others would argue, that a law has more to it than just that. But there are some other questions I wanted to take. Dave, were you going to say something?
I thought that interesting, two points. One, interesting that the Einstein law, or something that Hugh was talking about, has been proven beyond reasonable doubt now. That's interesting that it has not moved up to a law where it ought to, in my opinion.
Right.
And so sometimes these labels get stuck to things and they just don't change even if they have them.
Well said.
And then B, obviously, is interesting that what reasons to believe uses instead of this word theory, which has such a loose definition on a problem. I think in reasons to believe's mind now has gone obviously to talking about these models. You know, that reasons to believe has their model, and they said let's put it to the test, and they're telling the evolutionists, you know, come up with your model and let's put it to the test. You know, in the course of the last 20 years since reasons to believe around and their model's been out there, you know, reasons to believe's model's done quite well with their predictions, you know, of things that happened. The revolutionists, I would say, they're tested hypothesis. They just said they were tested. They didn't say it came out correct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everything. Their testifies have been falling apart. You know, that there are chains of obviously trees and what evolution, what mutations and natural selection can do has gotten more limited. And so I would say their test hypothesis have proved.
So that's 150 years against 16 years.
Yeah. Something interesting from what you just quoted there. You started out quoting that the theory definition is from the National Academy of Sciences. However, the definition of law, you did not say that it was from the National Academy of Sciences. We can infer that that is his version of a definition, which probably doesn't carry as much weight.
I think you're probably right. I think you're right. He's a part-time lawyer. Do you do lawyer work?
Engineer.
All the way. Engineer all the way. Engineering lawyer. Sir.
Yeah, when I hear the word law, I'm drawn to Kepler's three laws of planetary motion, you know. Planets sweep out equal areas in equal time, the radii. The square of the period is equal to the cube of the radius. And they move in ellipses. Well, those are observational information that was gathered over a number of centuries by Tycho Brahe and other wise people. And Kepler said, these are my laws. And Newton came up with his theory of gravitation. But the laws were that this is what's observed, you know, over centuries, and this is the way I express it by, you know, he drew the equations for that. Then Newton explained them and says, well, if there is this thing called gravity, you know, which he didn't say what it was, then that would be a theory of gravity. But the Kepler's laws were laws, and that's the way, those are just some concrete examples of it.
Okay. One thing that, well, go ahead. One more in the back.
This is kind of more of a comment, but I'm reminded of that scene
A movie.
I mean, trying to be smart. And impress everybody with how smart he is and how compelling his argument is. And he's doing what this guy is. He's just spitting out pieces that he thinks are really indomitable from the book. As if he understands that.
And so the guy says, oh, well, then if you're reading that, that's from so-and-so's book. What, are you going to come up with this from so-and-so's book next? Or that from so-and-so else's book next? Do you have any original thoughts of that? And it's a really good generalization of how this argument is being thrown out there. You know, well, people make this argument, so let me throw a bunch of these quotes at you. Not an intelligent person. There's all these things that are just, you know, somebody who is taking, you know, an education and not really applying.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I can say, if you look at the whole article, you might get that out of it. But in this particular argument, I don't know we could do it that way. But where I was driving with this is down here, as we're talking about fact as an observation repeatedly confirmed and accepted as true. I don't know if really that, if you were to talk to philosophers of science, and they're the ones who actually discuss these kinds of things. This is not science. This is philosophy of science. This is a description of what scientists do. That is, by definition, philosophy of science. So we've moved out of science. This particular author has moved out of science and moved into philosophy of science, which is okay. We can all talk about philosophy of science. But the problem here is a fact as an observation repeatedly confirmed and accepted as true is not what philosophers of science look at when they or describe when they talk about facts. And the problem with the word fact is that one person's facts might be somebody else's theory. And the problem with facts is that if we call facts observation reports. Okay, now if you go back to the 40s and get into some interesting philosophy back there, a fact was considered an observation report that was undisputed. It was something that somebody else could look at too. If I boil water at sea level, you know, it takes 100 degrees centigrade and it boils water. Okay, that's a fact. We can repeat that and we can say, okay, that's an observation repeatedly confirmed and accepted as true. But it's also an observation report that has built into it certain kinds of theoretical presuppositions. A theory of optics, that when I look at it, I'm seeing what is actually there. And the fact that a theory of thermodynamics, that when I apply certain chemical features, that the heat, that the fire that comes out of it is going to generate heat. All these kinds of things are behind what we call a fact. It's much, much more elaborate than what we would like to have it be. It's much, much messier. So when we simplify it like this, that's fine. But now let's go and challenge what he claimed, the author claimed, was that we said was false. And that is that evolution is a fact. Evolution is only a theory. Evolution is not a fact, and it is not a scientific law. I think we kind of agree that this first clause is not what we claim. We do not claim that evolution is only a theory. It's more than a theory. At least on their, we claim they believe. But we do not believe that that evolution is a fact. Evolution, defined as the generation of all the phyla and creatures in the world from one last universal common ancestor. Okay? We will deny that. We do deny that as biblical creation theorists. Why would we not say evolution is a fact then?
Because there's too many pieces of data that are contrary to it.
There are too many pieces of data that are contrary to it. And can you see all of the creatures that allegedly flowed from that last universal common ancestor? Can we actually observe all of the quoted evolution that supposedly occurred from that?
No.
No. So how do you get that to be a fact? If we use their definition of a fact being an observation repeatedly confirmed and accepted as true, on their definition, they're wrong. It cannot be a fact. On their definition, which is why I want to go through their definitions, because it's important. I happen to disagree with this definition, but let's just leave it alone and let them live with their own definitions. Al.
Yeah, to me, the fact that of evolution or the theory, whatever it is much more, you know, more of a fact than is creation. Creation cannot in any way be proved because you're dealing with faith. Okay? And I don't see how a creationist can say, yeah, we know this is so because the Bible says so.
Okay, Al, show me the observations that occurred and were reported in any peer-reviewed journal that showed the last universal common ancestor evolving into its successor.
Into what?
Into its successor, the next thing that happened in the chain.
Well, I think evolution is full of stuff like that.
Okay, well, all I need is one peer-reviewed journal article that shows that, that shows an observation of that. And you won't find it because that was billions of years ago and there weren't people around there. Just like there weren't people hanging out with the dinosaurs. Okay? So let me get this across, Al. When I talk about it not being a fact because there was nobody there to observe it, I'm not saying it didn't happen, although I will on other grounds object to it. But what I am saying is it cannot be a fact if by their definition it requires an observation repeatedly confirmed. Okay, now that's where we go now. See, because you're saying it's a fact, it's a theory. I'm just kind of waiting for you to stand up and start dancing because, you know, you're getting, moving around some heavy stuff there, getting that language game.
Who was there at creation?
God was there.
God was there.
But you're playing a different game. It's called distraction. Okay, let's move to somebody who's actually going to get into this. Did you have your hand up? Please, go ahead. Yeah, it probably would make him uncomfortable. In the back.
We're looking at the words theory, law, and fact, and we're preoccupied with the definition. I would suggest that the ideas of those three paragraphs are pretty widely understood by scientists. Back in the 60s, when I was studying linguistics in UCLA, we had to read a lot of stuff.
Mm.
At one point, Noam Chomsky challenged us what he was really doing with race science. And he elaborated what he referred to as levels of adequacy in scientific inquiry. As I remember, his lowest level was observational adequacy. The next higher was descriptive adequacy. And the highest was explanatory adequacy. And I noticed the word right here, explanation, description, observation. Exactly the same. I think that view of science is so structured. It's pretty widespread. However, it's related to the words that
okay. Now let's, even if we accept that as true, and we will, I'm not going to dispute what you're saying Chomsky said in the 60s. Yeah. The important thing to remember is that, and before I move to the next slide, important thing to remember here and what the walk away is that it is not a fact. Evolution is not a fact. If evolution is the last universal common ancestor, growing into this multitude of phyla and different creatures. Because a fact requires observation repeatedly confirmed, and there was nobody there to observe the so-called fact of evolution occurring. That is what would be required in order for you to call evolution a fact. The reason I bring this up is that there is a word game that is played with the ambiguity or the vagueness of the term fact. When evolution theorists, particularly evolutionists, like this author, want to propagate the idea that evolution is superior to creation theory. Be very, very careful of the word game. It is a word game, and you have to be able to identify and pin it down with great precision. It is when you pin them down using their own definition and force them to live with their own definition and say, please show me a peer-reviewed article where the observation occurred where the last universal common ancestor turned into its successor. That is the point. That is the point of no observation. And no observation means what? No fact of evolution per se. The rest of it, it would be inference, but that's a different story. Because that's not what they said here, Al. This is what they're saying. Okay, go ahead.
If I were evolutionist or the author of that article, I would say that we are observing it through the fossil record.
facts.
Does that count?
No, it doesn't count because you're not observing it. You're observing fossils. When I look at a fossil and I pull it up and I characterize it and I give it dimensions and I check out its physical properties and those other things, what the observations I make there, I can hand off to somebody else that are repeatable and confirmed as true, are facts. That fossil was in that place at this time and has these features. That's a fact. But that is not evolution. That is the fact of a particular fossil in a particular place. Again, we got to be very careful about how we're using the terms. I could say there's 5 million fossils, and the fossil record has all of these different features, simplicity to complexity. Okay? We can show simplicity to complexity, but that's not viewing evolution. That is not an observation.
I think you're oversimplifying the idea of what a fact is. Because, you know, Newton, when he came up with the theory of gravitation, he had observations. This happened, this happened, and this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you put those observations together to conclude gravitation. It became the theory of gravitation, but yet it was based on these different items that showed the properties of gravitation. So those are, in the same sense, you're talking about the fossil records. Those are fossils that are, it's a fact that you found this one here and this one here and there, and therefore you conclude, you take those facts together and you conclude, develop your theory.
Yes, so we're not arguing that that's not what happens.
If you're going to say that you have to observe that, observe that life being created in order for it to be a fact, you know, a conclusion
from a series of inferences isn't itself a fact. It's a conclusion. A fact is something that's an observation repeatedly confirmed and accepted as true. So we may get too deep into linguistics here, but I want to end this one on that note, that we have to be very careful of what we're talking about. And if it seems like I'm parsing words with too much parsimony, it's because you have to do that to avoid the vagueness and the word games that go along in this kind of a contest. So let me move on. Now, here, there's 15 of these things, and I thought to myself, I would get through this rather quickly this morning. Really, really silly thought. That was silly. Okay.
No event of history.
That's right. Okay, the next one, this one will go fast. Okay? I made it go fast. Natural selection is based on circular reasoning. That is what Scientific American claims that we say, we being creationists, that they all lump into one group. Even if it were, who cares? Natural selection doesn't mean anything. Okay, natural selection, whether it's circular or not circular, doesn't prove or disprove evolution. So my question is, so what? This is one of those paper arguments that I've seen some young Earth creationists use to try to mess with the evolutionists, and I don't think it gets any traction at all. Which is why I put, so what? This is a red herring, if you will.
What is the circular?
Okay. I'll let you hear it from the... Survival of the fittest is a conversational way to describe natural selection. I got to make sure I got the page numbers right here. But a more technical description speaks of differential rates of survival and reproduction. That is, rather than labeling species as more or less fit, one can describe how many offspring they are likely to leave under given circumstances. Well, let me move forward here. Drop a fast-breeding pair of small-beaked finches and slower breeding pair of large beak finches into an island full of food seeds, and within a few generations the fast breeders may control more of the food resources. Yet if large beaks more easily crush the seeds, the advantage may tip to the slow breeders. Okay, he's not getting to the circularity here. The circularity would be something like this. The fittest are those who survive, and those who survive are deemed the fittest. That's the circularity. Okay. Now he goes on, and I'm starting to read that thing and realizing that's not what, he's not getting into the circularity. But that's the circularity. And it really is meaningless. It doesn't matter to us.
But those beaks kind of prove evolution, I think.
The beaks that he's talking about, that the Beak of the Finch was the book that this all came from. Let's get clear the air on that one. You have these populations of finches on an island. All sorts of changes occur to the seeds. So the one population that can't eat the seeds, what do you think happened to them? They got killed to death, okay, because there was no food. So, natural selection steps in, and what happens to the group that can eat the seeds? They survive. They flourish. Okay. That's proof of evolution to them. I don't get that one. Film at 11, I guess. Okay. Let's move on here. Evolution is unscientific because it is not testable or falsifiable. It makes claims about events that were not observed and can never be recreated. Do we say that? Is that what RTB teaches?
No.
I don't think so. I've never seen Hugh Ross or Fuzz Rana or anybody on the RTB team say that evolution is unscientific. Some of the young Earth folks I've seen do that. Say, well, that's unscientific because you can't prove it or disprove it. Well, actually, you can. That's the very problem that they're suffering, the evolutionists, is that there are some things to test and there are some things falsifiable, and they're running into some big problems with that. But the reason I put this up here is not to argue with them, but it's to let you see what a very, very prestigious magazine like Scientific American says that you believe.
Did they ever mention the distinction between young Earth and old Earth creation?
No. It's all lumped in, which is our problem. It really is our problem. Our problem is to distinguish ourselves from the young Earth and the old Earth, to make sure that people know exactly where we stand on that. Go ahead.
I think that's done deliberately by the scientific community. They know the difference between old Earth and young Earth creation people. But they deliberately, like with the evolution question, obscure that fact and fail to make the distinction. I think that's a deliberate, purposeful strategy of theirs to try to discredit those that have credible arguments. Well, these are 6,000-year people. Well, we're obviously not. When probably the majority of Christianity is not 6,000-year people.
I think you're right, but I don't know about the numbers, you know, whether majority or minority. I wouldn't dispute it. I just don't know. But I will say this, that if you talk to a lot of folks and ask them about creationism, one of the first things that pops into their mind is that it's young Earth creationism. That's what they believe. Why do they believe that?
Because they're the ones that are trying to get the schools.
Because it shows up on the news. It shows up on the news. What is more interesting on the news? And remember, the news is there to do one thing. Sell advertising. No, it's there to sell advertising. It's there to entertain. But ultimately, it's there to sell advertising. So what sells advertising? Whatever's dramatic or entertaining. Okay, so what is the most interesting drama that you can insert into the creation argument?
Controversy.
Controversy.
The stupidity of a six-day creation.
Well, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. If I tell you, if I'm as a reporter on, you know, Channel 7, I Missed It News, and I come up and I stick my camera in the face of some young Earth creationist and say, well, tell me, what do you think about the age of the universe? Well, it's been only around 6,000 years, and, you know, the Bible says it, I believe it, and that does it. Okay, and then you go to the guy wearing the white lab coat, and he's looking very professorial, scientific, got beakers in the background, doesn't smile, has a cool look about him, like Rich Dean, okay? Intelligent, creative, and he says, I hereby pronounce that guy's a moron. This world has been around for billions of years, and there's evidence all over the place. We teach it in the schools. Does that make for good news? Of course, you're pitting this creation person who thinks everything's 6,000 years old against the omniscient scientist who tells everybody, of course, this guy's a fool. It's very dramatic. And so that's how the portrayal occurs in the news media. What is our job as Christians, particularly as Christians who come to a class like Hugh Ross's, is to let them know where we really stand, that the Bible does correspond to an old universe, the Bible does correspond to an old earth, and that that's perfectly commensurate with the evidence that's coming out, the observations that are coming from science. And that if we look at the scientific facts and we compare the two models and ask, does the creation model do a better job fitting the evidence than the evolution model? That is where we need to take people. That is where we need to take people and say, look, here's the evolution model. Look at how it compares with the facts. Those same facts compared with the creation model, particularly the RTB creation model. And you'll see that the RTB creation model, the biblical model, does a better job of explaining and predicting the evidence than the evolution model does. That is where we need to ultimately take people. If we forget that and we get too wrapped up into the brain damage of all the little details, then we will have missed our point. The details are here to support what we're talking about ultimately. You mean in terms of what we are here to do, our purpose?
In the world as RTV, would you say that, I mean, of course, we're to evangelize.
Yes.
To get people to come to Christ through the fact. But would you say that RTV purpose, I guess our chapters or whatever,
sure,
is to let them know that it's not just down here, so that it is an altar?
The question is it the purpose of RTB and the RTB apologists to present this, to present the question, does our model fit better than their model? And yes, that is a primary purpose. Obviously, the ultimate end of that is evangelism. But the reason we do it is to break down the barriers that are impeding people from being able to accept it. A lot of honest, good people cannot accept the Bible when they look at the news reports and the newspaper articles, etc., that show a 6,000-year-old Earth. They can't do it. It just doesn't work for them. And it doesn't surprise me. It didn't work for me either when I was an atheist. And so when you are able to convey to people, look, you can still keep all your understanding of the real world and be a Christian and accept the Bible, that breaks down that barrier. That's what we're here for. Sir?
It's not only though news media and that sort of thing, but a cursory look at the Bible itself as a factual document, as you would read any other nonfiction book.
Mm-hmm.
Say, the earth was created in 6 24-hour periods, and then we should look at all the genealogies that add up to about 4,000 years. You have to, a person who is not being guided by some higher power or by some alternative explanation such as Reasons to Believe would provide, is likely to fall into that argument without any other external influence.
Possibly so. And I think you're right. A lot of people do.
Taking
one portion of it literally. Because there are more than one account.
They say it's all true, and it's not all true.
Go ahead.
I think we should do Occam's razor, keep it as simple, the simple explanation as possible, but not be simplistic. And when you have a simple knowledge of Hebrew, know that the word that's used can be used for a variety of definitions, from 24 hours, 12 hours, daylight, or a long period of time. You say, well, then how do I determine that? Well, just read the context. Context is fine. Day 3, plants growing and bearing seeds or embryos of some kind. Day 6, you've heard you go over that many times. 3 types of animals created, man created, garden created. Adam tills the garden, takes care of the garden. Adam names the animals. Adam gets singulitis and sees Eve and finally says at long last. Now, the simple explanation is this is not 24 hours we're talking about. And nowhere does the Bible use 24 hours. Yom, the same word that's used for age at that time in Hebrew.
So I think the simple explanation, just looking at Genesis 1 all by itself, is longer than 24 hours.
So it's no dispute with that.
Right? No, you just look at it common sense. Do plants grow and bear seeds in a 24-hour period? No. So we're not talking 24-hour periods. Simple.
Okay, we'll engage that debate after class, because that's a great debate, or another day, because that actually is a very interesting debate. Let's get into some more of these questions, and again, I want to put this back into context. What magazine is this coming from? Scientific American, one of the most prestigious magazines in the world. This is a magazine that's feeding the scientists and the community and the universities where your sons and daughters go to school, that is telling them what we think. Here's what else. According to the Scientific American, increasingly scientists doubt the truth of evolution. That's what they're saying, we claim. And this was really interesting to me, because I was wondering, how is it that they don't see the circularity of their own argument? First of all, peer-reviewed biological journals support evolution as a fundamental concept. So in other words, they're trying to disprove that scientists doubt evolution. Okay, how does this disprove it? I don't know. The peer-reviewed biological journals support evolution as a fundamental concept. Okay, I guess you could say that's evidence that they're still believing in evolution. But we're not saying that it's gone.
That's their magazine.
That's the bottom line, exactly. Serious scientific publications disputing evolution are all but non-existent. This is the key word here. Okay, watch those words. Watch those words, because what are they qualifying any other magazine, a scientific publication, disputing evolution?
It's not serious.
It's not serious. Right. If it's a serious scientific publication, what is it doing? It's agreeing with evolution.
Yeah, I would say that there's...
Okay, hold on a second now. Hold on a second now. We're not done yet. Few anti-evolution manuscripts are submitted to leading journals like Nature and Science. Well, that's kind of a shock. Those that are submitted merely identify evolutionary problems, but they don't deny evolution. Now, what do you think the chances are that if you put an article in Nature or Scientific American denying the theory of evolution, that it would get published?
Zero.
Probably very close to zero. And if it weren't, you could probably buy 6 lottery tickets and win them all. Okay? No, of course not. This is a ridiculous argument. It's a ridiculous argument, because if the only way you can get published is to ascribe to the theory of evolution, then what are the magazines and journals going to look like?
They
look like evolution. Yes, of course they are. That's exactly what you've got.
Very few journals make it to the peer-reviewed, anti-evolution, make it, because they're disproved by the serious scientists that are the peers of that, so they never make it into print. You never hear from them.
You're arguing in the same circle they are, Al. You're saying it's not serious science if it's not evolution. Therefore, you can't get your article in here because you're not doing serious science.
Look at that doctor that was...
Okay, hold on a second. We're almost out of time, and despite my best efforts, we're only up to number 5. And by the way, let me go back here. The reason that I went through this so fast, if you call it fast, I mean 18 minutes or whatever, is to let you know that this is what they say about us, that we're making claims that scientists doubt the truth of evolution, and this is their counter argument to it. Are there other arguments that scientists are doubting the truth of evolution? Yes, there are. There are plenty of them. But they don't talk about them. This article was particularly insulting to me because it was so intellectually dishonest. Because it's so very easy to search the literature and find other arguments other than the absence of anti-evolution stuff in evolutionary journals. That's a stupid argument. I don't know why they came up with it. Except that maybe most of the readers of Scientific American already adopted and like it. The next thing they said was, disagreements among evolutionary biologists show how little solid science supports evolution. Does RTB even claim that? I don't think so either. I have heard young Earth creationists say this. I have heard some say this. I said, well, look, you guys are arguing with each other. You must not have real science, because if you had real science, you wouldn't be arguing with each other. Well, that's ridiculous. Real scientists do argue with each other. That's part of the way science progresses.
It's a bogus argument. I mean, they can turn it around completely legitimately and say disagreements among creationists show how little solid science supports creationism.
Of course.
And it's just as legitimate.
This is a bogus, it's a bogus argument, but we don't even say this anyway. This is not part of the scheme of reasons to believe. We do not say that disagreements among evolutionary scientists show that their science is bad. Now this one, I can't even believe they put this up there. But there was this argument.
At least he has a little sense of humor.
All right, so do I need to go any further with this one?
I could say the same thing. If we descended from dinosaurs, why are there still dinosaurs? That's why we're not dinosaurs.
I don't know who... You'd have to be a seventh grader or something to say something like that. You know, if we descended from monkeys, why are there still monkeys? I don't know. I don't get that.
Why are there still parrots?
That's exactly the right argument, Al. I compliment you. That was the right argument. Okay, evolution cannot explain how life first appeared on Earth. Now look at the way they answer this. First of all, origin of life remains a mystery. They acknowledge that, which is kind of a first step. That's a nice first step for them. But biochemists have learned how primitive building blocks of life could have formed. Boop, notice the flashing green light here. Could have formed into self-replicating, self-sustaining units, laying the foundation for cellular biochemistry. And then the next thing is, you got astrochemical analyses. Another flashing light here, fans. The word hint. Astrochemical analyses hint that quantities of these compounds might have originated in space and fall into the Earth in comets.
Nobody was there.
Nobody was there, that's true. Evolution is confirmed no matter how life first appeared. Okay, this is stranger than fiction, but true. This actually shows up. The argument, as I'm putting it here, shows up, and I'll read the whole thing to you while we don't have time. But here's the bottom line to this goofy argument, is that instead of saying that we can explain how life first appeared on Earth, they merely tell us that, well, we have some idea that it could have formed, maybe, possibly, self-replicating units here, and, well, maybe it fell out of space. You know, doggone it, something happened. But no matter what happened, evolution still happened. Okay? What kind of a weak sauce argument is that? And that's in Scientific American. So, I don't think they've answered this proposition of ours very well. I actually believe that RTB does ask this question. Evolution cannot explain how life first appeared on Earth. Yes, you're right. Evolution doesn't explain it and cannot explain it. And again, when I talk with folks who want to argue about evolution as the fact, and they say, well, you know, it started up in this bubbling little cauldron, and there was all sorts of sunlight, and of course sunlight provides all the energy, and the chemicals are already there, so it's just a matter of time. And we all know that there are some kinds of things like matrices of mineral crystals and things like that, snowflakes. Well, they form automatically, and they're really complex. And so it's just a matter of time before life forms like that. They smile, and they've won their argument. And I answer them again the same question. Would you please show me one peer-reviewed article in any journal, anywhere on the planet, that will take us from, well, we'll explain it this way. These were the initial conditions, and here's the evidence. This is the stepwise pathway, chemical pathway, from non-life to life. Would you please show that to me? And they stare at me. And then they'll do what Al does and talk about something else. Because you can't... The bottom line is there is no explanation for the origin of life from a evolutionary theoretical perspective. Evolution cannot be a fact, therefore. And evolution cannot explain how life appeared first appeared on earth. It does not and cannot. And maybe in the future they'll claim it, but if you have this, if the first thing that comes out of their mouth or off their typewriter or whatever is origin of life remains a mystery, have they not agreed with us?
That's it.
Okay, were you going to say something? Okay.
Oh, I was going to say, but their point, I think that they're making it, is evolution is separate from origin of life.
Yeah.
And no matter how the first life got here, we don't care, but once it got here,
they say both things. They say, number one, that we don't know how it happened, but it did, but we don't really care because everything that happened after the last universal common ancestor still happened.
Right.
Okay, they do say that. But there's also a camp that doesn't want to leave alone the origin of life problem, because if they do, what does that open the door to?
Creation.
Oh, you better believe it. Why do you think they spend so much time on this?
Creation is really proven, isn't it?
Because that's not proven any more than this is proven.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
I agree with that. I agree, but here's the problem, Al. The problem is when you have a scientific establishment acting like it's something is a fact when they have no evidence for it. The very claim that they want to make, they cannot make on their own terms.
There's more facts for this than there is for a God creation.
All the same facts for the same facts are being used by both sides. Just like I said earlier, Al, the question isn't are there facts. The question is, what do the facts that already exist fit best? The creation model or the evolution model? And we're all going to agree that we haven't had God come down here and chat with us lately. Okay, now he did that about 2,000 years ago, but he hasn't done it lately. So we have to infer just like the scientists have to infer. But we get to legitimately infer just the same way the scientists get to infer. Furthermore, because we're inferring the same way that the scientists do, what we are doing is every bit as scientific as what they're doing. Our model and our systems are exactly the same. We're coming to a scientific conclusion, even though they don't like the theological consequences.
I don't see how you can falsify that, where you can falsify this.
I can falsify this, that we still have time left. Okay, we're out of time. Yes, you have squandered another perfectly good hour on this stuff. So let me do this. We'll go over a couple of things. What I'd like you to do is just for about 20 seconds, talk to somebody right next to you and tell them one thing that you got out of this. Just one thing. Just take 20 seconds, talk to somebody around you and say, what one thing did you get out of this? Okay? He won't hurt you, Al. Don't worry about it. I think so, and so is Buzz. And he's been accepted. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's close it up right now. And we're going to go, but let's finish this up. Okay, you've just spent a minute or a minute and a half chatting with other people who sit next to you, talking about one or more things that you learned today. You can do it that easily with somebody that you don't know. It really can be done. And I hope that what you've learned here today and thought about today, you'll spend a little bit more time cogitating on and applying, because ultimately that's why we're here, not just to sit here and be entertained, to actually to learn something that you can use when you walk away from here. So on that, I'm going to pray, close us out, and then we'll be dismissed. So let's pray for a second. Lord, thank you for giving us minds with which to love you and with which to learn about the things that you've given us on this earth. May we act with love and charity towards those who don't know you, particularly those who are hostile to us and who don't know the things that we know. Let us always be aware, Lord, that there was a time when we were once like them. Bless everyone in this class, and may they go out and do good things according to your will, Christ. We ask in your name. Amen. Thank you very much. Have a good week.
Mark.
Thank you.